We're ready to go.
It's Monday, it's December 29th, and it's study night, and we are studying diligently seeking God. And we're on session 15 now of this topic. We've been in Hebrews 11 for a while because that's where it has our key verse, which is Hebrews 11:6, which says, "But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." So that's what we've been looking at. And in this chapter, it gives us all these examples of these people that did diligently seek God and that did what they did by believing. We looked at Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Jacob and Joseph. And we're looking at Moses now. And it's been a couple of weeks since we were together, so I just wanted to recap what it says about Moses before we go any further. Starting in Hebrews 11, verse 23, it says, "By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment." So Moses' parents, Amram and Jochebed, they hid Moses by faith, by believing. So there must have been some word or instructions for them to believe. There wasn't any written word that we know of at that time, but God was able to talk to people. He could put his spirit upon them and speak with them. And someone that had the spirit of God could tell somebody else what God told them, right? So either way, if a person would hear from God directly or hear from someone else who heard from God directly, they could believe those words and act upon them and do what they do by believing. Verse 24 says, "By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season." So he was 40 years old, it says, and he knew that he was a Hebrew. Now, he was adopted by Pharaoh's daughter, and he was raised as an Egyptian, educated as an Egyptian, and was living in luxury. It was the royal family, and it was the richest nation in the world at the time. So he could have just stayed there, but he chose instead to be identified as one of the Hebrews who were slaves, and their lives were miserable with the hard back-breaking bondage that they had, but they were the people of God, you see. So Moses had a choice: live in luxury, but outside of the will of God, or put up with the affliction of those that are slaves, but they are God's people, and they have God's promises, and they had God taking care of them. And he chose the right choice. Verse 26 says, "Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward." Remember, God is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. So he wanted to belong to that group of people that were considered God's people, that had God's word, God's promises, you see. He knew that the reward would be greater than if he lived in luxury in Egypt for that short period of time. Relatively short, even if it was his whole lifetime, that's a relatively short period of time, because, you know, he'll get up again and he'll live forever, just like we will. You know, if we fall asleep, we'll get up again and we'll live forever. So the things that we do now, this is a short period of time that we're in. But after we get up, you know, there's no end to that. Verse 27, it says, "By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible." Now that's a loaded verse, because remember, he killed that Egyptian that smote the Hebrew. He avenged the Hebrew because he considered them his brothers. Pharaoh found out and sought to kill him, and it says he fled Egypt. He got out of there. But this tells us that when he left Egypt, he didn't do it because he was afraid of the king. He did it by believing. So God must have told him, "Moses, get out of there." And he told him where to go because he went to a specific place. He went to the land of Midian. And it says he endured as seeing him who is invisible. God is spirit. God can't be seen with the eyes. You could see the king of Egypt, right? Couldn't see God, but he chose to follow the one that could not be seen with the eyes. The gods of Egypt, they all had statues, right? They had physical objects that people could recognize and worship. God's invisible. There's no statues of God, right? God is spirit. So Moses was one among the others that we have read about that chose to seek that invisible God. And that's a reason why God has to be sought out, because he can't be seen with the eyes. He can only be known through the way he reveals himself. And he has chosen to reveal himself through words, right? God's very specific. He communicates with words. He also does amazing things, but he communicates with words. Now, after Moses left Egypt, let's go to Exodus 2. Before we get to the next verse, in Hebrews 11, which we're going to focus on today, I want to just get an overview of what happened after he left Egypt. So we'll go to Exodus chapter 2, and starting in verse 15, this is after Moses smote the Egyptian that smote the Hebrew. And then the next day, he was trying to settle an argument between two of the Hebrews. And the one said, hey, who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Are you going to kill me like you did the Egyptian yesterday? And then Moses knew that what he had done was known. Verse 15 says, now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. It's from Hebrews 11 that we know that Moses did this by believing, not out of fear, okay? It says he fled from the face of Pharaoh, but Hebrews 11 tells us he did it by faith or by believing. He was instructed to do it, and he followed those instructions, and he wound up in the land of Midian. God must have told him to go there. It's not written in Exodus that he did, but we put the sections together. We look at Exodus, we look at Acts 7 with Stephen's testimony, we look at Hebrews 11, and we use the key of scripture buildup to see all these bits of information form a larger whole, and they complement each other. Now, verse 16 says, now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. So Moses stood up for the ones that were being oppressed by the stronger ones. And he helped these 7 sisters, and he watered their flock for them. Verse 18 says, and when they came to Reuel, their father, also known as Jethro in the scriptures, when they came to Reuel, their father, he said, how is it that you are come so soon today? And they said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us and watered the flock. So they identified Moses as an Egyptian, probably because of the way he walked, you know, sideways with his hands like that, or maybe the way he was dressed or the way that he spoke. But to them, he looked like an Egyptian. And they said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us, and he watered the flock for us. And he, Reuel, said unto his daughters, and where is he? Why is it that ye have left the man? Call him, that he may eat bread. And Moses was content to dwell with the man. I mean, he stayed. So Jethro, or Reuel, invited him to live with him, and he gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter. That was Yvonne DiCarlo in the movie, who was also Lillian Munster in the Munsters. But Moses was content to do that. And she bare him a son, and he called his name Gershom, which means refugee. For he said, I have been a stranger in a strange land. And it came to pass in process of time that the king of Egypt died. The one that had sought Moses to kill him, he was dead at this point. So another pharaoh, probably his son, had taken over. So he had died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage. And they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. So they already were serving with rigor, as we saw, to the breaking point. It seems that it got even worse for them when this new Pharaoh took over. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. He had made a covenant that he would give them the land where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had been living as strangers, right? And he had told Abraham that his descendants, his seed, would be in bondage to another nation, and God would judge that nation and bring them out with great substance. Remember that? That was the covenant that God had made with him. And that covenant was passed down to Isaac and to Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them. That means he focused on them. He saw them, and he was willing to do what he had promised some 400 years ago to Abraham. He was ready to fulfill that. Chapter 3, verse 1 says, "Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law." This is where Reuel is also called Jethro. He was the priest of Midian. He was like the prince or the chief of his territory there. And Midian, by the way, was a descendant of Abraham through his second wife, Keturah. So they would have known the God of Abraham there. So he was the priest of Midian, and he, Moses, led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb, also known as Sinai. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burnt with fire, and the bush was not consumed. Unusual sight. And Moses said, "I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt." And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here am I." And he said, "Draw not nigh hither," don't come too close, "put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground." Moreover, he said, "I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land unto a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, the land that he had promised to Abraham in a covenant." So what God's telling Moses must have sounded like really good news to him at this point, because he knew that he was one of these people and that they would get the things that were promised to them. God was going to pull it off. God was going to come down to deliver them. Yay! Verse 9 says, "Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them." Again, good news. Verse 10 now says, "Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh." Oh, wait a minute. God said he was going to come down and deliver the people. Now he says, "I am going to send you, Moses." And he's saying, "Me? I thought you were going to do this." He said, "Come now, therefore, I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." What a shock. And Moses said unto God, "Who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt?" You know, it's like I left as a fugitive. They were out to get me. And even my own people, when I tried to help them, they rejected me. They said, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us?" All these things must have come back to his mind. It was 40 years ago, but it must have seemed just like yesterday that these things happen. And he said, who am I? I have no credentials. I have no authority. What are you talking about here? Verse 12 is God's response. He said, "Certainly, I will be with thee. And this shall be a token unto thee that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. They would come back to this place. That's where God would give them the Ten Commandments. He would speak out loud to them. But apparently that wasn't enough for Moses, because he has more objections. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, The God of your fathers hath sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And the word I am is the Hebrew word ha-yah. Okay? That means to come to pass or become. So he's saying, I become what I will become. So I'll be whatever I want to be. I can bring things to pass. I can be whatever is needed. I will be that to you. I'll be everything to you. I am that I am, or I will be what I will be. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am, ha-yah, I will be, hath sent me unto you. Remember, God said, Let there be light. There was light. That was the word ha-yah. When God says something be, something come to pass, it happens. You know? And God said moreover unto Moses, Thou shalt say unto the children of Israel, The Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob hath sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial unto all generations. So it's the Lord, that's Jehovah. And that Jehovah is derived from Hoyah, okay? The one who will be, the one who will become. Verse 16 says, Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say unto them, The Lord, Jehovah, God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, appeared unto me, saying, I have surely visited you and seen that which is done to you in Egypt. Now, the word visit, when you see that in the Bible, that means look upon, pay attention to. It doesn't mean to sit down and have coffee together necessarily. But it says, I've seen you. I've watched you. I've looked at you. I have my attention focused upon you, and I see that which is done to you in Egypt. And I have said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt unto the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. And they shall hearken to thy voice. They will listen to you. And thou shalt come, thou and the elders of Israel, unto the king of Egypt. And ye shall say unto him, The Lord, Jehovah, God of the Hebrews, hath met with us. And now let us go, we beseech thee, 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. And I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go. No, not by a mighty hand. And I will stretch out my hand and smite Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in the midst thereof. And after that, he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And it shall come to pass that when you go, you shall not go empty, but every woman shall borrow of her neighbor and of her that sojourneth in her house, jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment, and ye shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and ye shall spoil the Egyptians. That agrees with what God had promised Abraham many years ago, that they would leave with great substance. Chapter 4, verse 1 says, And Moses answered and said, But behold, they will not believe me. Now God told them that they would, right? That they will hearken unto you. Moses said, But they will not believe me, nor hearken to my voice. For they will say, The Lord hath not appeared unto thee. So he's contradicting God at this point. He's not believing at this point. This is not the point where Hebrews 11 says he did it by faith, by believing. This is where he's arguing with God and trying to get out of it. And the Lord said unto him, What is that in thine hand? And he said, A rod. And he said, Cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground. And it became a serpent, a living snake. And Moses fled from before it. It must have been the dangerous, poisonous kind. Otherwise, he wouldn't have fled from before it, because he was a shepherd. He knew the animals, the reptiles in the area, so it must have been the dangerous kind. And the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thine hand and take it by the tail. Now, I've never been a snake handler, but I've seen them on TV and stuff. They always grab them right behind the head, right? So they can't be bitten by them. You grab a poisonous snake by the tail, what's it going to do? Turn around and bite you. But God said, put forth thine hand and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. And God said in verse 5, that they may believe that the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, hath appeared unto thee. God is teaching him how to do miracles. Isn't that cool? That was a miracle. And he did it just for Moses' sake. So he knew that, yeah, when God sends him, he will be able to produce these signs that God gives him to do. He's letting him practice, just him and God. God's instructing him. And it's a great course for us on how to do miracles. How do you do a miracle? Well, whatever God tells you, you do it. And you do it when God says to do it, where God says to do it, in the way that God says to do it. And then God produces the effect. You see, you follow the instructions, God produces the effect. Now, Moses just didn't try this on his own without God telling him, but he did what God said. You know, that's word of knowledge, word of wisdom. The word of wisdom is specifically what to do. And he followed those instructions, even picking it up by the tail instead of behind the head. And it did what God said it would do. Now, verse 6, he's going to show him another one. The Lord said furthermore unto him, put now thine hand into thy bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom, inside his outer garment there. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow. It was all white and flaky, and he had actual leprosy in his hand. And he said, put thine hand into thy bosom again. And he put his hand into his bosom again, plucked it out of his bosom, and behold, it was turned again as his other flesh. This was his own hand. He could see it. He could feel it. When he would do this for other people, they could examine it and say, yeah, that's leprosy. And then it's not leprosy anymore. That's the way it's supposed to be. And God said in verse 8, and it shall come to pass, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, with the rod turning into the serpent, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign. And it shall come to pass, if they will not believe also these two signs, neither hearken unto thy voice, that thou shalt take of the water of the river, that would be the Nile River, and pour it upon the dry land, and the water which thou takest out of the river shall become blood upon the dry land. Now, he didn't have Moses try there because he's not at the river of Egypt, but he said, this will happen just like those first two things. So you're going to have three witnesses, three signs that will prove that I have indeed spoken to you and I have sent you. I will back you up. I will make sure these things come to pass. So Moses is all set to go? Not quite yet. Verse 10, Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore, up till now, nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. So I don't know if Moses had a speech impediment, as some have suggested, or if it's the fact that, you know, he's going to Egypt and he was raised speaking Egyptian, but he'd spent 40 years speaking a different language now. Might be a little rusty. I don't know exactly the reason why, but he's telling God, I'm not eloquent. I can't speak well. I'm going to have to appear before the king. The grammar has got to be perfect. The inflections have got to be right. And I'm not the guy. And the Lord said unto him, who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb or deaf or the seeing or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth and teach thee what thou shalt say. You will not have to come up with the words. You will not have to formulate the sentences. You just say what I tell you to say. Follow my instructions. it'll be okay. You'll be fine. And he said, oh, my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him who thou wilt send. He's saying, please pick somebody else to do this job. I'm just not the right guy. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. A little teed off here. And he said, okay, is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well. And also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee. And when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart. He said, he's already on the way. I've talked to him. I know that he can speak well. He can carry out this job. And I have a plan where this will work. He'll be glad to see you. And thou shalt speak unto him and put words in his mouth. And I will be with thy mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you, both of you, what ye shall do. And he shall be thy spokesman unto the people, and he shall be, even he shall be to thee instead of a mouth, and thou shalt be to him instead of God. Isn't that cool? And this not only teaches Moses, but it teaches us what a genuine prophet of God does. God gives him the exact words to speak, and the prophet speaks the exact words that are given to him. You see, in this case, God will give it to Moses, the exact words. Moses will give those exact words to Aaron. Aaron will repeat those exact words to the people. Verse 17 says, and thou shalt take this rod in thine hand, wherewith thou shalt do signs. And Moses went. So he obeyed. I'm not going to read the rest of the record because it would take all night to get through it all. But Moses agrees to go. He says goodbye to his father-in-law. He takes his wife and his two sons with him. And he has to circumcise his son along the way. So he complies with the covenant that God had made with Abraham concerning circumcision. He meets Aaron. He tells Aaron all about his meeting with God and what the plan is. And they get together with the elders of Israel. They do the signs. They believe, at that point at least. They go to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh is belligerent, just like God said he would be. In fact, the magicians of Egypt duplicate a lot of the signs that Moses does. They turn their sticks into snakes, but Aaron's rod that turns into a snake eats up the other ones. Okay? And when they turn the water into blood, the magicians do the same thing. It doesn't help the situation. It would have been a lot better if they took the water that had been made blood and turned it back to water again. But they didn't think of that, apparently. They just turned more water into blood. And then there were lice. And there came to a point where the magicians told Pharaoh, these things that Moses is doing, we don't know how he's doing it. I think you should listen to him. And Pharaoh would listen to Moses and give in and then change his mind. And he did that multiple times. Now, I want to go to Psalm 105. It's a psalm that we've looked at before in light of diligently seeking God. It's the psalm where we saw that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were prophets and were the anointed of God. But it goes on and it mentions Moses here and the things that happened in a very concise way. And I want to read part of this with you, starting in verse 23. So we're in Psalm 105, verse 23. And it says, Israel also came into Egypt, and Jacob sojourned in the land of Ham. Because again, Ham, the son of Noah, was the one that his family populated Africa. And he increased his people greatly and made them stronger than their enemies. He turned their heart to hate his people, to deal subtly with his servants. He sent Moses. This is God doing this. God sent Moses, his servant, and Aaron, whom he had chosen. They showed his signs among them and wonders in the land of Ham. He sent darkness and made it dark, and they rebelled not against his word. He turned their waters into blood and slew their fish. Their land brought forth frogs in abundance. In the chambers of the kings, every house had frogs in every room, and even in their beds, even in the king's house. He spake, and there came divers sorts of flies and lice in all their coasts. He gave them hail for rain and flaming fire in their land. It said the hail was mingled with fire that ran along the ground. And the hail was so big and heavy that it killed animals and it destroyed crops. He smote their vines also and their fig trees and brake the trees of their coasts. He spake and the locusts came and caterpillars, and that without number, so that you couldn't even see the ground because of all these critters that were walking around and eating everything up. And they did eat up all the herbs in their land and devoured the fruit of their ground. And then the last one, in verse 36, he smote also the firstborn in their land, the chief of all their strength. Every Egyptian family had the firstborn son die overnight. That was the Passover night. And then it says in verse 37, he brought them forth also with silver and gold, and there was not one feeble person among their tribes. Egypt was glad when they departed, for the fear of them fell upon them. So that's as far as we're going to read in Psalm 105. But we're going to go back to Hebrews 11 now. Now that we have at least an overview of what happened in between verses 27 and 28, we're going to read Hebrews 11, verse 28. It says, through faith, through believing, he, Moses, kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. So it was through faith, through believing, that he kept, that Moses kept the Passover. And the word kept here is the Greek word poieo. Very common word in the Greek. It usually means to make or to do something. And in this case, it's regarding the Passover, and it's in the singular, so it's only regarding Moses. Now, all of the Israelites kept the Passover, but Moses was the one that instituted the Passover. And some of the translations reflect this. For example, the ISV says, by faith, he established the Passover and the sprinkling of blood to keep the destroyer of the firstborn from touching the people. In the Weymouth translation, it says, through faith he instituted the Passover and the sprinkling with blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch the Israelites. Okay? So this is something Moses did. It's not talking about all the people keeping it, like Moses said. But Moses, he didn't come up with the idea of the Passover. It was entirely God telling Moses what to do, just like everything else that Moses did once he agreed to carry out the tasks that God had for them. And in Exodus 12 is where it tells about the Passover. Exodus 12. Now, verse 1, it says, and the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. And this would be in the springtime. It's the month known as Nisan or Abib. Speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the 10th day of this month, they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for an house. And if the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it according to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. Ye shall take it out from the sheep or from the goats, and ye shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. And they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts and on the upper doorpost of the houses wherein they shall eat it. Remember in Hebrews 11:28, it talked about the sprinkling of the blood. So when they would put the blood on the two side posts and on the upper doorpost, they would take a bunch of hyssop. Hyssop looks kind of like lavender or mint or salvia, something along those lines, and then take a bunch of it, dip it in the blood of that lamb, and then strike it, and it would sprinkle upon the doorposts. Okay? And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire, and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Eat not of it raw, nor sodden, or boiled at all with water, but roast with fire his head with his legs and with the pertinence thereof. And ye shall let nothing of it remain until the morning. That which remaineth of it until the morning ye shall burn with fire. And thus shall ye eat it, with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand. And ye shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. That's why it's called the Passover. I will pass over you when I see that blood on the doorposts. So the blood of the lamb would save the life of the firstborn son of every family. Okay? The eating of the lamb would be for their health. Remember in Psalm 105 it said there was not one feeble person among them? That eating of the lamb would have been to strengthen them. And if anybody needed healing, they would have been healed. Because you have a group that's what, a couple of million people, not one sick person. Somebody must have got healed that night, you know? Probably a lot of them. To be strengthened and healed by God, that would have been the purpose for the broken body. The shed blood would be for the salvation, the saving of the lives of the firstborn. Verse 14 says, "And this day shall be unto you for a memorial." So every year they would have a little reenactment of this with the Passover meal. "And ye shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. Ye shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. 7 days shall ye eat unleavened bread. Even the first day ye shall put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eateth leavened bread from the first day until the 7th day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. And in the first day there shall be an holy convocation." That would be a Sabbath day, a rest day. "And in the 7th day, there shall be an holy convocation to you. No manner of work shall be done in them, save that which every man must eat, that only may be done for you. And ye shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For in this selfsame day have I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall you observe this day in your generations by an ordinance forever. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at even, ye shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at even. 7 days shall there be no leaven found in your houses. For whosoever eateth that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land. Ye shall eat nothing leavened. In all your habitations shall ye eat unleavened bread." So Moses called the elders and gave them the instructions here. But that was the instructions for that Passover, and he gave them instructions for the ones that they would do every year at the same time. And this is so cool, because when God does something, it's just amazing. No human being could come up with this that God did. It saved the lives of the firstborn of every Hebrew family that night. All the Egyptians that didn't put the blood on the doorpost, every family had their firstborn son die that night. It says from Pharaoh that sat on the throne, his son died that night, to the prisoner that was chained up in the dungeon, his son died that night, and everybody in between, and the firstborn of all their animals died that night. But the Hebrews, none of them died, because God saw the blood and passed over to save the lives of the firstborn. That's why those firstborn, God said, they belong to me. I'm the one that saved them. They belong to me. And eating the flesh of the lamb, that gave them the strength and the healing for the journey, so that there was not one feeble person among them all, which is just amazing. So they did it that night. And then every year they would have a Passover meal to serve two purposes. One would be to remind them of what God had done for them in getting them out of Egypt, out of bondage, into freedom, into the promised land, fulfilling his word to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, okay? Doing miracles along the way, all the signs and wonders in Egypt and the signs and wonders that followed. The other purpose would be when Christ would come, what he would do, the way that he would offer himself as a sacrifice on behalf of all the people, it would coincide exactly with the way they did the Passover lamb. In 1 Corinthians 5:7, it says, "Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened. For even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us." Isn't that something? Christ, our Passover. And that includes us who had been Gentiles. Okay? The Gentiles never had anything to do with the Passover unless they became proselytes and joined the nation of Israel. But those that believe in Jesus Christ, we retroactively get the history of Christ himself, who was an Israelite. All the blessings of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob get to us through Jesus Christ. The covenants, the promises. We were strangers of the covenants, like it says in Ephesians. But now, since we believed in Jesus Christ, we've received that Holy Spirit. We've been made children of God. Now we are the household of God and the habitation of God. The moment we believe in Jesus Christ and confess that he is Lord, it becomes true then for us that Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Not just for Israel, but for us. Christ, our Passover. So that lamb whose blood saved the lives of the firstborn in Egypt, that lamb represented the coming Christ, the anointed one of God, in fulfillment of all God's promises. Not just the ones to Israel, but salvation for every person of every nation. God kept a lot of that secret, you know. But once it's been revealed, we can know these things. Christ, our Passover, sacrificed for us. Look at Luke 22. In Luke 22, a lot of people think that when Jesus Christ had the Last Supper with his disciples, that that was the Passover meal. I'm going to show you that it wasn't. I'll show you why people think that it was. Verse 7, Luke 22, 7 says, "Then came the day of unleavened bread when the Passover must be killed." The way this is translated, it looks like this was the day that the Passover was killed. This is before the Last Supper, right? Immediately before. But the word "came" there, that indicates the day was approaching. The day was drawing near. It wasn't that day that they would kill the Passover. And I'll show you that. Verse 8 says, "And he sent Peter and John, saying, Go and prepare us the Passover, that we may eat. And they said unto him, Where wilt thou that we prepare? And he said unto them, Behold, when ye are entered into the city, there shall a man meet you bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house where he entereth in." Usually it was the woman that would carry the pitcher. A man would carry a goat skin, so they could single him out. "And ye shall say unto the good man of the house, The master saith unto thee, Where is the guest chamber, where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he shall show you a large upper room, furnished, there make ready. And they went and found as he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. And when the hour was come, he sat down and the 12 apostles with him, and he said unto them, With desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I say unto you, I will not any more eat thereof until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God. He said, I just really wanted to eat this Passover with you, but that would not happen. The meal that they were eating was not the Passover meal. Okay? Verse 19 says, He took bread. That's the word for regular bread that's leavened. It's not the word for unleavened bread. If it were the Passover, it would have to be unleavened bread. This is not unleavened bread, and it doesn't talk anything about a lamb or anything like that. In fact, in John chapter 18, if you look at John 18, verse 28, this is the day of the crucifixion, okay, which is a couple of days after that Last Supper. It says, "Then led they Jesus from Caiaphas," who's the high priest, "unto the hall of judgment," where Pontius Pilate was. and it was early, and they themselves went not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Okay? If the Last Supper had been the Passover, then why would these guys, on the day of the crucifixion, be concerned about defiling themselves that they might not eat the Passover? You see, the Passover would be eaten that night. This is the day that the Passover lamb would be killed in the later afternoon. This is the time. You see, Jesus Christ was killed at the time, the same time that the Passover lamb was to be killed in every household, okay? And they were to come to Jerusalem to do this in the place that God would choose. So the crucifixion coincided with the timing that God had given to Moses well over 1,000 years before. Isn't that amazing? God gave Moses the exact time to do these things. And then when Jesus Christ died, he died at the exact time that the Passover lamb was to be killed. Okay? And then that evening would start the 7 days of unleavened bread. That's why there was still leavened bread in the upper room at the Last Supper, because there was 7 days of no leavened bread, right? 7 days. It doesn't say start 2 days ahead of time. No, that first day would be the first day of unleavened bread until the seventh day of unleavened bread. Okay? So Jesus Christ was the Passover. He is the one that was sacrificed. The shedding of his blood saved all of our lives. And his broken body, that was for our strength and healing. You see? When he died in obedience to God. It says that in Philippians chapter 2, verse 8, where it says, "And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross." And it was not just that he died. He had to die at the right time, at the right place, in the right way, to fulfill the scriptures, to fulfill the word of God. Moses was among those that received those words from God and wrote it down, that it could be fulfilled later on when Christ would do what he would do. You see? So Moses, what he did was by faith, by believing. He diligently sought God's will. He needed a little coaxing to get started, but once he did, he always went to God. Okay, God, what do I do? God would tell him, do this at this time, in this place, in this way. And Moses would do it at this time, in this place, in this way. And it had the immediate impact of what was intended for the people that were alive and present at the time. And it had that lasting effect, particularly with this Passover, every year on the same day, at the same time, they would reenact this Passover. And then when Jesus Christ died, he died in obedience to God's will. He wanted to eat the Passover with the disciples, but he put that desire aside because God wanted him to be the Passover, okay? And he was the Passover not only for Israel, but for all of us. So I just think this is so exciting, and I just love God's word and the way it all fits together.